recording now.
Okay, thank you. And you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. And my very special guest today is Meir Schneider. He is a PhD and licensed massage therapist who healed himself of congenital blindness and developed an original holistic approach to health. The Meir Schneider self-healing method is a unique combination of therapeutic massage, movement, and natural vision improvement exercises for prevention and rehabilitation of degenerative conditions. A globally respected therapist and educator, Meir is also a best-selling author of books which include Vision for Life and Awakening Your Power of Self-Healing. And he is the founder of the School for Self-Healing in San Francisco. So I want to say hello and welcome, Meir, to this broadcast.
First of all, it's wonderful to be on your show. And second of all, it's my honor to be on your show. You're a wonderful person and a wonderful interviewer.
Well, thank you very much. And we have spoken many times in the past, but many people will be hearing you for the first time on this interview. So can you tell us something about how you were able to work to heal your own vision and how that work has inspired you to be able to help others heal?
I was born with cataracts. That's so unusual because so many people have cataracts in their 50s, 60s, especially 70s. It's nice to meet somebody without it. But only 1 out of 20,000 infants are ever born with cataracts, which is an opacity of the lens. And in my case, I think it was because my father had a photography lab in the apartment that we lived in, a secret one, and I think the chemicals have affected me. And my two kids were born with cataracts as well, but in a different generation. And what doctors did not know in my time is that you have to remove the lens at the age of 2 weeks, and you have to put very strong contact lenses at the age of 8 weeks when the brain starts to develop. Well, I was operated at the age of 4. They tried to remove the parts of, and I mean 4 years, they tried to remove the parts of the lenses that were more dense with cataracts, and the rest of it became scar tissue. So 99% of my lens is scar tissue, and I don't have the original brain sense of vision. My kids benefited both from medicine and my method. And basically, medicine is very happy when somebody sees 30% of normal vision, sometimes 40% of normal vision, as a result of doing the surgery on time, unlike adults that often see between 95% and 100% vision. But in my case, I had 1% vision. And when I worked with my kids and I did with them the eye exercises that I did with myself, only I did it in a playful way with them, their vision now is 100%. And that is unusual. They're the two only cases of that in the world. So what happened with me is that I was the quickest Braille reader in the state of Israel, very motivated, very energized kids. My parents were deaf, so I was doing all I could do to be as educated as I could possibly be. They came from the Soviet Union. They weren't very educated, and yet they were very curious about life, and they traveled the world, which was a great thing in spite of their deafness. And in my case, I was trying as hard as I could to get out of my situation. And no surgery, no additional surgery was offered to me. And then I discovered eye exercises in the base method, and I developed it way further. And today my vision is 70%. I read, write, and drive. No accidents, no tickets, and I'm very, very happy about that. So when I started to be able to see slowly but surely, you know, from 1% to 2 to 3 to 4, I felt like it was my second birth, and after a certain series of events, I just decided that's my mission in the world, to teach other people what they can do for themselves, what their potential is, and how to translate what I did with myself to others. And so that's more or less what I did in my beginning. And then the beginning of my work was when other people came to me and said, how you did it, can you share it with us? It was on the beaches of Tel Aviv, and other instructors tried to tell me that I was initiated to a whole new practice, and I started to develop my own therapy. And with the years, I learned that we can overcome many, many pathological conditions in the eyes, but also in the body. I ended up translating this whole idea to finding the special massage for muscular dystrophy and special work with multiple sclerosis and work with the back and work with other places. That's basically what I did. And that's why I developed the Center and the School for Self-Healing by the beach in San Francisco. And I must say, it's a very special place. We're in a residential area. And the Board of Supervisors of San Francisco have voted unanimously to allow us to have the space in a residential area so we can help people with disability and people with no disability to be here. And that's why I would like more and more people to come and train with us, both to work on themselves as well as to work with others. We use the beach, the trampoline, the hot tub, everything that we have here to help people to do better.
Well, that's excellent. And I know that you are conducting this interview with me because you are very much interested in having people come and actually learn how to offer the same kind of services that you are offering to people. And that's really, really important. So we'll get back to this again, but how do people contact you if they want to study and be certified in your technique?
What they can do is call our school at 415-665-9574, and they can also look at our website at www.self-healing.org. And we have a class that is starting on August 5th until August 24th. And it's really worth coming. People come from all over the world. We don't have enough of them, but they come from distance. And even being in New York is not such a big distance to come for a good healing vacation and study vacation in San Francisco. So many people go for a vacation just for the purpose of, resting. But the true vacation is vacation from life, vacation from our own mind, and vacation where we learn. You know, Kathy, I'll never forget the spinal bifida patient I had. That's basically where the vertebrae do not fuse. And he had a lot of pressure on his kidneys as an infant, and a lot of pressure on his digestive system. And his parents asked me if to do the surgery of removing that big accumulated cerebral spinal fluid that put that pressure on the nervous system. And that's why I felt medicine is wonderful. I said, do that surgery and let those vertebrae fuse and not have that pressure anymore. So they did that. And that part was wonderful, except physicians cannot have enough knowledge to avoid all kinds of peripheral nerves when they do it. So he had club foot, which means his foot was basically crooked and pointing forwards. And he had stiff and basically twisted knees. And he was offered about 40 different orthopedic surgeries before they would put him in braces. Well, I straighten with the right massage and the right stretches, the club foot and the crooked knee. And we were able to create fundraiser to have him walking on braces. And within 2 years, he stopped walking on braces and started to walk normally. So to give you the example, most physiotherapies would only be involved after all those surgeries would have been done. And this kid probably would have been in the wheelchair, probably being able to walk with braces here and there, sometimes as an adult. And so what I want to say, we do things that nobody else does. Another example is muscular dystrophy. There's a kid at the age of 3, he was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy, already deteriorated greatly. And so I taught his mom how to massage him. I worked with him. She has shown the results to his to a big muscle specialist, a physician, who wanted to offer her cortisones and other treatments. And she said, you know what? You don't need our treatments. They don't work much anyway. Looks like you're doing the right thing. And because we need more people to do it and we need more research in our field, I need soldiers. I need people to come to me and to learn about the inner potential that the body has. I want people to learn in intensive and not very long course how to start and mobilize the body in a way that it never moved before. We have more than 600 muscles. Most people use between 50 and 75 of them. We need to learn how to use muscles we never used before and activate them and start to work with them instead of wiping out the muscles that are always strong. There are very few very healthy athletes in an old age. They become very strong. They seem to be doing very well. And then as they become old, not only they are injured, they become very stiff. I know of one person who was a bar bouncer, very strong. Nobody would touch him. And once he approached his 60s, you couldn't even hug him and shake his hand because he couldn't handle it. His body was so stiff and achy. So what basically I'm saying is there is a way for us to study the vigor and the strength of your body. And I just ran for 17 miles on soft sand on the beach to celebrate the fact that I'm almost 65 already, just last Saturday. It was really a nice time to run. The water retreated. Absolutely. And I didn't do it as a marathon, just as fun, you know. And I want to see people being in my shape, better all the time.
So I have a question just to have an understanding of what you're talking about, because I think that sometimes people look at their athleticism based on maybe conventional standards or what looks beautiful, what looks strong, and what might work for certain kinds of functions. But even a bodybuilder who's building up certain muscles is going to have other complementary muscles that will atrophy because the workout and their training is not balanced. And that can ultimately lead to really bad health conditions. So essentially you're saying if we can understand truly the full spectrum of our muscle tissue and learn how to keep it healthy in terms of the whole system, then we have a better chance to remain healthy as we get older. So do I have a correct understanding of what you're saying?
Yes, healthy and happy, and I give you an example. For example, we could actually move our toes almost independently. And people who are armless, for unfortunate reasons, either were born with short arms or had an accident, sometimes learn to feed themselves with the toes. We know of some musicians who played guitar with their toes. And yet most people don't have any control over the toes, but we step on the feet all day long, and many of the feet muscles are toe muscles. So when I teach in my classes how to use the toes better, people feel a big release in their ankle. And that release leads to a release in their knees that are also stiff, which leads to a release in the hip joints and then in their back. And so what you're saying is absolutely correct. We're used to a certain amount of movement, and we're overstraining ourselves with those movements, and then we didn't learn how to use what we never use in our life. And that is the work which we're doing, integrating all the muscles together so we can be in a real good shape through our whole life, basically.
Excellent. And let me ask you this. I am a teacher of Qigong and movement and breathing, but I know that with myself and even with some of the people I'm working with, that while it's a very wonderful practice, it will overuse certain muscles. And so I had a person I was working with who came in with trouble with their knees and is being told that they need to have maybe some knee replacement. And I know that there are people that are told and do go into surgeries for knee replacement and hip replacement, and they attribute it to not having fluid in the joints. But I'm wondering if it's a misuse or a misunderstanding of muscle tone or not having the proper muscle tone that is causing the bones to collide in the first place. So I'm wondering if you have
Maybe only 1% is genetically induced. Maybe. 99% of them is exactly what you're saying, Catherine. Basically, it is lack of balance of the muscles that leads to osteoarthritis, which afflicts a quarter of the population in this country alone, basically, and close to a quarter worldwide. And the lack of balanced use in the body, for example, we're talking about the knees. Many people develop very strong calf, but they don't develop very strong shin muscles, the tibialis anterior, or the extensors of the toes. And so what happens is we don't have enough of a muscular balance, so we put pressure on the joints. It's always this way. You put pressure on the joints when the muscles don't do their work. And if we talk about cervical pain that leads to numbness in the fingers, that's a result of the fact that the hands tend to flex more. We type, we write, we wash dishes. All of it is flexing our fingers. We no longer climb up trees and climb up caves, so we don't extend the fingers a lot. So what we need is to learn to do that. And about the hip joints, too many people have hip replacement surgeries. And as I said, maybe 1% of them was destined to do it, but 99% caused it with sitting a lot, with over-contracting a muscle which is called the psoas iliacus, or the group of muscles, psoas iliacus, that shorten the space between the femur and the acetabulum, between the bone of the thigh and the opening of the hip. And if we would have learned to use our abductors, the muscles that move sideways, and I tell you, Catherine, you may have seen it in one of the introductory sessions that I did in New York with your help, that when I ask from people to stand, hold their chair, lift the leg sideways, and stay there for a minute, you could see more than half of the people frowning. Wow, what a hard task to do, to lift your leg sideways. Well, just think what it does. I mean, basically, we use our flexors too much, and we don't use enough abductors, adductors, extensors. So what happens is our muscles are working in a very rigid way, and consequently, we decay. We decay from overuse of some and underuse of others. And by the way, that also affects the nervous system. I think that's the main reason, if you ask me, for the fact that the nervous system collapses, why people, so many people, have these days multiple sclerosis. I think they have genetic tendency, but they first of all are overusing some and underusing other parts of their body. And that is basically what I want people to teach others to change. And that kind of practice just doesn't exist. And that's why I want people to come and train with me to do just that.
Yeah, I think that that's very important. And even people who may not be looking to have a career as a massage therapist, it might be something that they want to introduce for their own lives, for their family and, you know, circle. Or it might be people, as you say, who may have a genetic predisposition and want to be proactive in learning how to massage and move their body so that they can remain healthy. So I think there are so many different ways that someone might approach this. Can you speak to, like, the difference between how massage has an impact and how movement has an impact, or are both necessary?
Very interesting that you're asking that question. When we massage, and this is so important, we bring ourselves to the other person's body. It's a form of transcendental intimacy, I would say. So if I am wise with my own body, and if I moved in a way that works for my body, I can transfer that with my touch to others. And the best example I can give you is that once a kid came to me, I was myself then almost a kid, I was in my early 20s, and he had an enlarged heart. And his heartbeat was 104 beats per minute. And mine was, as it's written in the book, 72. So when I touched his heart and my heart, and I had an apprentice who was also this wonderful nurse, you know, when nurses are good, they really have a good observation capacity. So she measured our pulses, and within 5 minutes, both of our hearts was beating in a rhythm of 84 beats per minute. There was a great connection between me and that kid. Now, fast forward many, many years, I had an infant, actually she was a baby already, 2.5 years old, that had cataract surgeries in two eyes. One eye became blind, one eye was still sighted. And her parents called me from Israel and told me that she started to have high pressure in the eye. And I really warned them from taking immediately drops for it. So they brought her to me within 2 weeks. The whole family came. And for the first 2 weeks that I worked with her, not only the pressure did not go down, it went up. But then I remembered how I touched that kid, and so I put one hand over my eye and the other hand over her eye, taught her mother to do the same thing and her father to do the same thing, and there was another baby there who was a year younger than her, and they touched the two of them, and her pressure went down to completely normal range. She's now 9 years old and didn't take a drop in her life. So, you know, there's a slippery slope. You start with drop, then the pressure goes up, then they do a surgery, then the pressure keeps going up, and then they do a special mechanism that does irrigation and drains the fluid. It's really a hard situation with patients with glaucoma. So it's very important for us to combine massage and movement. You cannot really heal just with massage. You really have often to have somebody who touches you who can tell you, here is when you tense when you move, here is what you need to release. And massage and manipulation make a big difference. So we can do a massage for the central nervous system. I especially invented it for people with neurological problems, where you teach the brain to give new orders to the muscles. You can do a massage that helps rejuvenate bones with bone tapotement. We then tell people to also have a shower massage and sit in jacuzzis. We have massage that brings much more blood flow to the body. We also teach people self-massage a lot. I will never forget the woman whose breasts were removed, and I was teaching her self-massage, and she said, "Mayor, you teach me how to like my body again." And she lived, in spite of this, for another 35 years. So that was a nice one. But self-massage is great, but massage of others has everything to do with, first of all, you working on yourself, improving yourself, and then learning the techniques to improve circulation, to improve the muscles, whether somebody is dystrophic, what to do with them, somebody is athletic, different work, but also important work to get them to take away their stress. Somebody is mentally disturbed, help them to bring more fluid and blood to their brain. All that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. And so there really is a lot of ways of approaching the massage therapy in a very, very fundamental way as a healing process. And I know many good massage therapists here in New York, and for the most part, I would say that people approach it from the perspective of stress relief and pain relief. But I haven't really heard anyone other than yourself that is speaking about it as a way of changing really fundamentally how the nervous system works, how the muscle system works, how the messaging to and from the brain can be changed, and how certainly as you spoke about in terms of just the healing touch aspect of working with people, just understanding that as human beings there is this ability that we can transfer, or it's, to me it seems almost like a tuning fork where a person is able to realign energy by resonance. I'm not sure if that's what you meant.
I agree with you 110%. Yeah, exactly, that's what I'm saying. Look, I can teach anyone bone tapotement, but if your fingers are cold, if your wrist is stiff, you won't be effective. If you learned how to loosen yourself up, if you slowly increase the capacity in your own bones, you can prevent osteoporosis. And I have a very nice lady who came to me all the way from Iowa. She had her breast removed because of cancer. Her whole family had cancer. She had chemotherapy, and it caused her tremendous amount of bone loss. So she came to my class. Part of it was learning the awareness of working on different parts of the body in the class. And first she hated this massage of bone tapotement that comes to stimulate the bones, because we are trying to get the osteoblasts that build up the bone cells to start to be more numerous, starting to remind the body, like homeopathy reminds the body, what it can do for itself. So part of it was working kinesthetically and gently in the body, but part of it was walking for 8 miles every day from the home that she rented not far from our school, enter our school. So it was far enough for her to have a nice walk every single morning and every single night. And she changed her diagnosis from osteoporosis to osteopenia, and from osteopenia to normal bone. And that is in spite of chemotherapy, in spite of cancer. And then she trained other people to do the same thing in Iowa, and she worked on her sisters and helped them a lot. So what I can tell you is a lot can change, and it takes sometimes a real diligent learning. Like, she was in crisis when we tapped on the bone, she did not like it, and then she loved it and taught it to everyone else. And I know of a lady who had diabetes and improved dramatically from juvenile diabetes with tapotements that also wake up the blood circulation and the blood formation in the bones. So there's a lot that we can learn, but you don't learn without working on yourself. So most of the work in the first part of our class is working on ourselves. I had that life experience that, first of all, working on me helped me so much to work on others. And I want others to have the same kind of experience, that change happens in them. And then the change can happen in your family members, with a circle of friends, and with clients. And that's what I'm seeing is lacking in most teaching. It's more like, what do you do to the other, rather than what do you do to yourself so you can open the other so you will function or she will function better.
Mm. Well, that does make a lot of sense to me, and everybody certainly can have some improvement in their life. And one of the things that I notice that is also very difficult for people is to focus in on what they need to do, or focus in and actually do those things that would help them, that would be able to improve their own life. It seems very difficult to help people do that. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting is that in your work that you do spend a great deal of time when you're working with someone. It's not like you go to the doctor for 20 minutes, they prescribe something, and then you go home. So it really is a commitment on the part of you as a health practitioner. So how would you want to convey that to people who might come study with you, the kind of attitude and fortitude, or if maybe just joy of doing it, but what kind of characteristics should they endeavor to manifest for this kind of work?
So I think it makes a huge difference if you just let go and allow yourself to study for many hours during the day. We have long days, nice lunch break, but long days to work on ourselves and make a nice difference. I will never forget, talking about changes, that I taught once a class for legally blind people in Portugal. I'll teach another one in Spain this coming October. And it was for 6 days, and it was long days. And one of my Brazilian therapists who came from Brazil was able to get a woman that thought that she lost her vision permanently, and her doctors thought so, to a disease that is known to be blinding, retinitis pigmentosa, where the retina simply dies. And as she was sitting with her in the sun after doing the sunning exercise, where you close your eyes and move your head from side to side and your pupils expand and shrink, she started to show her material that she could see, like she could see red and she could see black. She could see like nice prints. And eventually she could get her to see letters, which was really amazing. So basically in my classes, similar things like this happened. I had a class where I had one man with muscular dystrophy. His wife was deaf. She lifted him like a sack of potatoes going up and down the stairs. She put him in a wheelchair. She put him in the bathroom. She was an amazing woman. I mean, she could even change CDs for me when I did not know how to use the control, but she was very sharp. And then I had a guy who was a boxer, very strong man, and his father became blind from retinitis pigmentosa, and he was very fit, much more fit than I am. And we would go as a class to the balcony. We had many other people there too. We'd go in a class to the balcony, and Janos, the guy who came to me from Hungary with muscular dystrophy, would sit and look at the waves. Will, the guy who came to me from England, would run backwards for about a mile or two and would come back so much quicker than I thought anyone could. And then most of the class was somewhere in between. We would kind of run backwards for half a mile, much, much longer than it took Will to run a mile. But we learned to relax, the man with the retinitis pigmentosa, and his vision improved. And Janosz improved himself so much that with the aid of his wife, he was able to make 12 steps in the room, and that he could not do before he came to my session. And so in the class, you don't ever expect, you don't know what's going to happen, but you work on your potential, and big changes ended up occurring many times in my training courses. Now, both of them, Jan and Will, became excellent practitioners. Will helped thousands of people to get rid of back pain, to see better. Janosz, in spite of his muscular dystrophy, and another guy that I know in Israel by the name of Ami, in spite of his huge polio problem, he was able to improve some with my work, is able to help many strong men with massage and with movement that he contemplates for them. So I help people in all parts of life, and I have people who are completely without any difficulty of that nature, and they also evolve, and they say, what did I not do all my life? What did I not move? How did I not feel my body? Now I'm starting to feel it. So that was really amazing what happened in my class, and that is why I really want more people to come. I want more changes, but I also want more changes to spread in the world. We don't have enough of us, and I don't have very big classes here. I have wonderful classes, but they're not very big, so there's more individual attention. And yeah, we study in-depth physiology that explains what we're doing, but at the same time, we're starting something new for everyone.
And I just want to remind all of our listeners, you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and we're speaking with Meir Schneider, and he is founder of the School for Self-Healing in San Francisco. And he is telling us about his revolutionary work on healing the body, healing one's vision the natural way, but also learning about how we can become practitioners in our own lives in order to help our loved ones and also potentially to build a profession for oneself. Now, I know, Meir, in New York State, it may not be true in all states, one needs to have a license to do massage therapy in New York State. So would you recommend that your training be for everyone, whether or not they have that licensing, and then those who are licensed can practice in New York State, but other people can certainly improve their own lives and the lives of their family? How do you work with the licensing process?
Well, that's very interesting. They start to also have licensing process in California, which was very rigorous. And I made a decision not to comply with the licensing process because my teaching is so different than what the state of California wants, like basic strokes in Swedish massage, pretty rigid forms of anatomy and physiology studies, rather than a very open physiology discussion that we have in our classes. So what I saw, for example, when I taught a class in Brazil, is that I had many physiotherapists and massage therapists that absolutely did not think that my teaching has anything to do with what they learned, but they combined it. I have one a very good practitioner of mine by the name of Fernanda, who is an optometrist, but she decided not to practice optometry. She gets her professor of optometry twice a week to measure people's vision, even though she could easily do it herself. But what she does, she teaches them eye exercises to improve their vision. So we're like protest practitioners. Like, we do what we want to do. So I think it would be very wise for somebody who wants to do massage to first of all study with me and then go to a school in New York and get the license to practice, but to not be spoiled with the regular strokes that they have and really learn healing touch, touch that can make a difference with movement. And then, you know, to go and study and get a license to practice. I think that's the basic solution, because I just decided not to deviate from the teaching that I want to have. If you just want to, you know, massage people so they'll be feel-good massage, it's great. But if you want to prevent a wheelchair use for muscular dystrophy patient, then come to me. And if you want, you know, to study simply optometry, well, that's wonderful. We need them. But if you want to learn how to get people to not need optometry, well, come to me and then go and get your license. And those are different practices. And so what I teach is so different. And I think that the way that people can start and practice even before they get their licenses is to call themselves educators in my work. And once you're an educator and you sign a disclaimer with someone that you educate them in the Mayer-Schneider method, just like you can do it in the Alexander method or in the Feldenkrais method, then I think the whole thing is different. And as I'm saying, I like many of the massage therapists in New York. I lectured in the convention of the American Massage Therapists of New York. I'm a member of the AMTA. I myself have a massage license. But I don't really want to get into what they need to do to get their licenses, because, you know, there's much more movement in my kind of work. And that's why one day we wrote an article in the AMTA magazine, and this is movement for your life, movement for your patients, and movement for your practice, to take away the whole sense of boredom and routine, to kind of be renewed with every case that you work. That's what we teach, basically.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying in terms of the method that you're teaching and how people can approach this as a profession. I wanted to bring clarity, however, that people should understand that if they want to get a license, they still have to go to that process based on the state that you're living in, because it's different state by state. And that's a completely separate thing from learning this these techniques and this information that you're teaching, which from my perspective offers so much more depth and practicality and really enhances it far beyond, like you said, the various techniques that you learn to become licensed as a massage therapist. Well, that is all very wonderful. It doesn't really cover it in the depth that you're covering it. So people, I just want people to understand that they have to make these choices, and if they want the certification, that's a separate and additional path. But if they want to find knowledge that they're not going to find anywhere else, then that's the path to your school. So, you know, just as a point of clarity for people
absolutely,
to understand.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's a very important point of clarity, because I basically call myself an educator, and everyone who comes and studies with me and works with me comes to me as an educator. For example, I'm going to have a lady who's going to come to find a way to prevent cataract surgery. Well, if a cataract expands and grows, then she'll need to see an ophthalmologist who will remove it. But many of the people who worked with me were able to stop the cataract from growing with my kind of work. They don't offer that in medicine. And so people who come to me come to be educated. And I agree 100%, Kathy. I think it's a good idea to have a license so you're good with the state and you're good with the people, and to tell them that you also teach them something different.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And truthfully, a lot of the, you know, in my personal opinion, a lot of the licensing processes were developed for more sort of clerical reasons and just to ensure that people had basic information and were not going to create harm. So there's reason for all these licensing laws from state to state, but it doesn't mean that those who follow that path are going to be the best in their field. You really, really do need to dig down into understanding our body beyond just the structure. As you were saying before, there are many facets to your work that goes beyond just understanding the structure, but also looking at how the body works in harmony and how to bring that back, that harmony back into balance. So I think that that's a really important part of what you teach as well, that the balance.
Absolutely.
Really,
the inner flow and consciousness of the fact that things in the body can change, and they can change to the better in spite of concept that says things cannot change. And it can really lead to huge change in many people. I'll never forget the state senate hearing that I was once participating in, when one physician was saying that physicians get punished for doing things that they're being told to do otherwise. And many of them have a lot of information outside of the institution that they learned, but they get punished for doing something different than their medical community tells them to do. So one of my students who was a physician, he had a practice as a doctor, and then he had a practice of a therapist in my work, and he did twice a week in one place doing my work and three times a week in another place doing medical practice. And I think that's the basic way that people can practice. You can say to a person, that's what I'm doing. If you want reflexology or if you want Swedish massage, that's what I will do. But then if you want to do something different that brings self-healing, that brings more consciousness, this is the practice that I can offer you. And the more people can offer, the better it is. I mean, from all directions.
Yes, that is true. That is true. So we still have about 5 minutes, I would say, or a little more maybe. So let's go into your course. Tell people that you're going to be doing something, again, you said in August, and explain what that is.
So I have two segments. Segment A is the 5th to the 13th. And from the first minute, of course, we work on our vision, but the emphasis in that course starts to be, first of all, breathing. We work on the fact that our capacity to breathe is about 11 times what we experience. So we're talking about different ways to breathe deeper. And the whole idea there is to get the brain to want to breathe deeper and, of course, to have a sense of more room in the body. And then we work on heart and circulation. And the idea there is to learn signs and symptoms of knowing when your circulation is not that good. For example, when you feel stiff and heavy, it's not that good. Sometimes rest for a few minutes is even better than exercise. So you will not feel heavy and your circulation get better. The main thing is don't exhaust yourself and have less blood flow. But on the other end, we also learn how to loosen up muscles that are always tight, that don't let the blood flow, and we learn some vigorous exercises to increase circulation in the main artery. So we do all of that. We also learn about the bones and joints and how to create full mobility in the joints so they will not bother us and that will function much, much better with them. And we learn, of course, how to balance the body so the spine will work better. And, you know, we have some quizzes, but mainly it's nice movement discussion. As I said, we use the beach a lot. It's a block away from us. It's the biggest room in our school, although we have a very nice classroom with a cork floor that people who have some disability can easily walk and not slide. It wouldn't be too smooth. And then we learn about digestion. And we do a very nice massage to take away spasm with the sphincter in the digestive system. Some people, all of a sudden, no matter how many medications they take, they can't digest, and they cannot get rid of the food. I will never forget how one lady basically did not succeed to digest anything, and her stomach was bloating. So I went to her home and I squeezed it, and all of a sudden it sounded like a washing machine, and she started to get better color and was able to move on and digest things better. So we do all that in segment A training. Segment B, we work more in kinesthetic awareness, but we learn how to work on the muscles. We learn how to work on the muscles of athletes to teach them to use muscles they never used and relax the muscles they always use, like the rest of us. We learn also, however, how to work on muscles of people with polio and how to work, and that is where we're so different in physiotherapy. Physiotherapy taught them to use their strong muscles to a point of exhaustion. And we were able to reduce some paralysis, not all of it, but then by doing that, we took away the pressure from the strong muscles. And our people got post-polio 20 and 30 years after the other people who got post-polio, which included all kinds of symptoms, and that included strokes and reoccurring of the polio symptoms. So we teach all that for the muscles, but we teach how to work with muscular dystrophy as well, special massage for it, which is very gentle massage to build up the muscles and drain all the materials which accumulates in the muscle cells, and then help them to build muscles gently and slowly, especially in water. Then we work on the nervous system in every way we could think about it, from the evolution of it, and also we're working on the autonomic nervous system, and we work on the fight and flight mechanism of the autonomic nervous system, and then we work on coordination, and anyone who wants to get my CD, Strengthening Your Central Nervous System, can even download it from our website. And then there is a wonderful time that we work on vision. The day on vision, we meet later so we can have a night walk in the park so we can improve our vision in the daytime and in the nighttime. And we definitely learn massage techniques to improve vision by relaxing the neck and loosening up the face and relaxing the eyes. We have massage to increase the activity in the nervous system. And we have massage to improve the bones and joints and muscles. So all that we do in that one short training course, 5th through the 13th and 16th to the 24th. The 16th to 24th is muscle, vision, and nerves, basically.
And again, tell people how they can connect with you and find out more or register for your courses.
So you can call us at 415-665-9574 and register. And you can also look at our website. The school catalog is there as well. But don't worry about the catalog. We have to give something to the state. Every class has its own shape. It has to do with the students in that class and how I feel they need to be approached and what they need to learn. But we do have a catalog there. And again, it is www.self-healing.org.
And give that number again, the phone number.
415-665-9574.
Excellent. And that sounds certainly like a wonderful opportunity, and people will connect with you in either case, whether they can study or not, and hopefully they will. But some people might connect with you also for consultation, for advice, and to hear about your work. And also you do have your books, and I believe the most recent one is Awakening Your Power of Self-Healing, and people can check that out as well to learn more about the work that you do. So I want to thank you very much, Meir, for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Kathy, and thank you for interviewing me for my book a couple of years ago. I really, really am grateful for you for helping me to spread my message in the world.
You're very welcome, and thank you for joining us, and I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in and invite you to tune in again next week for another edition of Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. Bye for now. Take care, and keep rising. We all keep rising. Bye-bye.